Can go back one more time through the planning commission, Mr. Powell. Can you follow up?
Thank you, Chair. I've been allowed to run through our list, so bear with me here a bit. I didn't get my first big bite of the apple.
Really?
So, no, I was just asking general questions. You ought to come to a planning commission meeting. We have fun together. So my first question, and I guess I'll direct this to Jim. To your knowledge, have any county general plans that have been developed in the last 2 years, 3 years, I guess you could go back 4 1/4 years, included GSA and GSTs?
GSA being
groundwater management.
Okay. Thank
you. There's not a requirement. The requirement.
I'm not asking about a requirement. Have any of them included the counties' GSAs with their GSPs?
Incorporated them into the plan?
Yes.
No, not to my knowledge.
Okay. Next question. To your knowledge, nationwide, are you aware of any county in any state that has ever successfully or even unsuccessfully attempted to do a county-wide safe harbor?
No. No.
To your knowledge, is there any restriction preventing a county from entering into a county-wide safe harbor, both federal and state?
What's this? Can you explain what a safe harbor is?
You're not aware.
Well, I'm aware of the term, but I'm not sure what you're applying.
So I will give you the abbreviated 411. Commissioner Hart and I are very familiar with these. He successfully has one done. In layman's terms, you go through an assessment, and they are designed for private property generally. Take a ranch, and I do an assessment of the existing condition. I do an assessment of my management practices. There is an assessment of all the species that are present, all of the species that could be present, an assessment of the activities that I do, and in, for lack of a better term, it's a get-out-of-jail-free card, so that I can ranch without the headaches of state and federal government continuing to hinder my livelihood.
This is related to the Endangered Species Act?
Yeah. That's what it stems from, yes.
Okay.
Correct.
No, I'm not. I don't deal with that very much. I don't know if Eileen has any comments about the Safe Harbor Act or the safe harbor provisions, but that's not something that has that we dealt with in general.
And I'm bringing these questions up because, as Commissioner Hart mentioned earlier, on the Planning Commission, we deal with the law. Things are black and white for us. What is legal? What's not legal? They get to deal with the emotions. Let them have that. Next question. Going through the general plan, as counties are having to update, there are essentially 3.5 federal/state mandated components to the plan.
Before we go any further, there are no federal mandates to the state.
Respectfully, one of them, yes. The environmental justice started at the EPA and then ended up coming down to SB 1000 at the state level because the Fed said the state had to do it, so the state did SB 1000, which made the counties have to do it. So respectfully, it is federally initiated on its environmental justice.
But it's different. The federal environmental justice issues are much more narrowly defined than the state. The state's a very different.
We'll agree to disagree on that. Regarding the Healthy Communities Act, SB 1000, which we, county, has to deal with, the top three are reduction in health risks, address pollution exposure, and improve air quality. Now, Siskiyou County is one of the unique counties that we're allowed and have the freedom to essentially mandate our own air quality policies, because we are not in the valley, we are not in the city, we are not further south. So our direct negative impacts on health, pollution, and air quality are 98% driven by public land and the lack of management. Have you, in your general plan work in California, seen or helped develop a general plan that gives the county more power over public management in order to address the environmental justice component for those three parks?
No.
Okay. Then let's move on to the climate change adaptation, which gives me, should be given the supervisors great consternation. This, by the state, I'll jump to the end. It is under CEQA and evaluating the GHG emissions. Essentially, the state's telling the counties, you must reduce GHG emissions. Now, there's a little subcomponent there that counties need to identify potential negative impacts to communities at risk. I take that as we're a rural community, and I see what our state is doing on potentially changing vehicle registrations to miles driven as opposed to the value of the vehicle. It doesn't work in a rural county, and I look at Happy Camp, Soames Park, Cecilville, Tule Lake, Butte Valley, large county. Does the county have the ability to tell the state to go stick it where the sun doesn't shine when it comes to this, because of our unique layout for being a rural community? I mean, any type of a reduction of GHG emissions per the climate change adaptation component would place greater financial burden on our remote communities.
Well, first of all, you raised part of the issue you're raising is this.
Excuse me. You can speak into the mic. We're
sure.
Having trouble with the people online here.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Part of the issue the commissioner raises is this one-size-fits-all topic that's come up here, and it comes up pretty regularly related to climate change issues. The vehicle miles traveled is a good one. It's a pet peeve of mine. It's unfortunate that some of these requirements that are imposed statewide aren't sensitive to changes in differences in geography. A good example, you have similar experiences as the San Joaquin Valley, where there's very little public transportation systems there, yet they're still having to deal with the vehicle miles traveled issues. So it is a challenge. I don't think you need to tell the state to stick it. I think you just need to craft the plan and do the analysis that is effective and satisfies you. You don't have to go back and tell the state what you did. You could, if it doesn't comply with state law, it does open the county up for some challenges. And I heard earlier discussion about projects coming from the South County being challenged. You may have folks in the county that are litigation-oriented will be looking for non-compliance, technical non-compliance of state law. That's a risk you take. But I come back to what Brent was talking about earlier, and what I would say, you have to craft a plan that fits you to the extent that you can comply with the technical issues of state law. If you're not in compliance, then either you are going to get challenged or you aren't.
Okay. So you brought, I'll jump around because you brought it up, the vehicle miles traveled component. When counties are establishing their benchmark, and so I think I heard you say benchmark is as of 2023. Is that what we're using as a baseline?
Your baseline.
Okay. Because Commissioner Hart and I deal with benchlines, baselines, et cetera, in the environmental community. When it comes to that vehicle miles traveled, I'm curious, does the state, i.e. Caltrans, actually come out of hiding and assist with funding and labor to lay out the counters on the interstates and the state highways for you doing this plan? Because my experience, having been on the Planning Commission for 20 plus years, is they only show up on a project by project basis instead of giving us a real assessment on an annual basis for state highways.
Caltrans has never assisted a city or county we've been working for on a general plan update that I'm aware of.
How do you establish the baseline then for the vehicle miles traveled?
Well, I can't tell you the technical specifics since I'm not a traffic consultant, but traffic consultants have technical capabilities of conducting an analysis to establish the baseline.
And I would agree, but they've got to have the data to make that assessment. And if Caltrans isn't current, how do we go about getting that real-time vehicle miles traveled? Bad data in is bad results out.
Well, I wish my traffic guy was here to tell you to answer that, but my answer is I don't know.
Okay. I'll jump back up then. Since we dove into baselines and benchmarks, will this general plan include a benchmark for water storage? Both Upland, Midland, and Valley Forge.
Well, yes. That's not typically something that we would include in the general plan, but it's something we could talk about in terms of whether or not that made it was
it's a key component for healthy communities. Well, countywide, whether you're talking Tule Lake, Callahan, or Happy Camp, Wairika, no water, not a very healthy community.
Well, the general plan will, in the background report, will do an analysis of a whole range of topics, including water supply. And
not supply, storage, because we have plenty of supply. It's a timing issue. It leaves the valleys quicker than it should.
And storage, just a whole range of water resources. And as a part of the plan, we develop goals and policies and programs to address any issues related to that. But the plan itself wouldn't contain the results. It may be a program that's developed to address those storage issues.
Okay. Will it include current fuel densities?
In terms of background information?
As in current benchmark, the baseline that we're starting with. We have a fuel density that currently exists in 2023 in the county of Siskiyou. And our plan for healthy communities, zoning should take into consideration that current density and where we need to be.
Since you've raised it as an issue, then it's clearly important to the county, and it's going to be included in the background report analysis that we do. How far we take it in terms of developing policies and programs to address the baseline. that'll just kind of unfold as we, the plan unfolds.
Okay. Have you been involved in general plans that included carbon sequestration capacities?
Not really.
This may be your first. Then the
it's
last...
It's on our list of issues now.
Okay, good, good. And then the last one, and then I'll let everybody else go, because I've got pages that would go on. The zoning portion, will you have the ability, working with our staff, because I've been through the maps over 2 decades now, and be able to identify, it kind of spins off of what Supervisor Cobseth mentioned, identifying where we may need an ordinance changed or whatnot, similar idea. We have existing zoning in locations, say for heavy industrial, commercial, etc., that at the time they were zoned that, it may have made sense, but over the course of the last 40 years, that is not the right place for heavy industrial, and this place over here that may have been a rural residential 1, 5, 10, that is a better location. Will your model on the zoning portion be able to tell us, hey, you really ought to look at this area. This zoning is in conflict with existing uses surrounding that parcel?
That's a complicated question. The zoning ordinance portion of this is looking primarily at the zoning regulations, the uses, Brent talked about the uses, from an ordinance-wide perspective, the general plan land use element includes the land use diagram that will look at how the land uses are allocated, and as you know, the zoning code and zoning designations implement those land uses. So if it's a part of the development of the general plan and the land use element, we identify, and it wouldn't necessarily be the consultants, it would be from talking with stakeholders, folks in the community, staff, you, and the board about where those issues might arise, where there are incompatible uses or inconsistent uses that we would look at, come back with recommendations on how to modify the land use plan to support more compatible uses. The zoning code would then essentially support that in terms of the regulatory structure, but actually rezoning those properties would be a program, an implementation program that would follow on the adoption of the plan and the zoning code.
You know, I get that, and there's a whole process for rezoning. I guess the reason I bring this up, I know it exists in my district, which includes Scott Valley. I know it exists in the Shasta Valley, Commissioner Hart's district, where I guess the crux of my question, when you look at existing benchline zoning and how it is currently zoned, do you have the ability to do a layer over the general parcel now? And that layer could lay in soil type and water availability. Because what I see and I've seen a number of projects that have come in here, whether it be on a BLA, a land split, or what have you, we have current parcels that are zoned Ag 1 that A, they're gravel, and B, they have no water. And at best, maybe if you spit on it enough twice a day, it might make Ag 2. But will it be able to identify those inconsistencies? Because what we have is we'll have a project proponent come in wanting to do a certain project. The land is zoned Ag 1. Any kindergartner could tell you couldn't grow anything on it, and it sets limitations.
That kind of detailed analysis, soil type, water availability intersecting with zoning. It's not something we would typically do. It's not part of our scope of work. It's something that we could talk through with the county staff and the commission and board about whether or not that's an analytical process that we should go through. But right now, that's not, we wouldn't typically do that.
Okay. I'll give somebody else a chair.
Mr. Hill.
We speak about housing, and that probably very important in the, on the minds of everyone. And there's two elements of housing, right? There's affordability and availability. Those two don't necessarily mean, with the supply and demand rule, more availability does not necessarily mean you're going to have more affordability. Do you agree? And that, and I think the state of California wants these, how this housing to continue, but as a, and just an example, up here in our housing, low-cost housing element, if you make $28,000 or less, you are available to have a rent of two-bedroom apartment for $1,080 a month. I know a lot of people would say that's not affordable housing. Do you understand? Do you follow that? So, and it's available. There are houses, units available up there. So the two of them don't necessarily mean that you're going to have, I know that's the trend, but if we're going on to make housing available, let's not kid ourselves it's going to be affordable.
Well, that's generally the metric that is used. If you have high supply, then that's going to generally dictate lower costs,
right?
That's the way our economic system is working. That's the assumptions. They may not always pan out that way, but that's the theory behind the housing elements. And that's the theory behind the state's, sorry, that's the theory behind the state's number of changes in state law, is that they're trying to push for increased housing supply as a result of that, make housing more affordable because there's more houses available, so the prices tend to come down. That's the underlying economic theory behind it.
Yeah, the other thing that I just read about may affect general plan is this builder's remedy. You understand? You know what that is? And could that affect a zoning element in your general plan?
Well, the builder's remedy is really a if your housing element is not compliant with state law, builders can come in with certain types of housing projects, affordable housing projects, and get that approved by right. They don't have to go through any discretionary review.
And that would is that for the construction quality, or is that basically civil rights? Is it a minority rights issue or a low-cost housing issue? Is that the reason?
It's in it's an attempt to allow under circumstances where a public agency hasn't adopted or had a housing element certified, that it would still allow certain projects that are deemed affordable to go through without subject to review. And this has been around for a long time. It's just come up recently when some jurisdictions in Southern California have declined to approve their housing elements in a way to thwart housing development. And so this provision in the law essentially allows developers under certain circumstances to circumvent local regulation.
And there's nothing we can do about it.
There's nothing you can do about it, but it's a rare, unusual thing. In all of the communities that we're doing general plans or housing elements, we've seen it threatened once and not used at all. Is that correct, Brian?
Yes.
Mine's our housing element expert. So if we, even though this is not part of our project, you have a certified housing element, right?
We did.
The process?
Just finished.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations. So, you shouldn't have to worry about it.
my frustrations is, when I was on the city council many years ago, back east they started trying to force people into condominium type units to sell their private home and go into there, and they would own the condo but not the property. Personally, I see that as a come around the end on personal property rights and use. And I see more and more of this. We have an area in Mount Shasta where we have a number of condos. You own the condo, but a development organization owns the land. Is that going to get more prevalent, in your opinion?
No.
Good.
But the condominium law in California is complicated enough that we see very little condominium development because of the liability laws associated with it. So, in fact, there are communities in San Joaquin Valley that I'm working with where they're trying to find ways to encourage more condominium development because of the affordability aspect of it. That they're more affordable ownership units. That they don't have to be structured so that, oftentimes the townhouse or condominium develops, the underlying land is owned in common. You own maybe the land underneath your condominium, and the remainder of the land is owned in common by all the owners. But there are circumstances like you're talking about. I know so I was reading about in Florida. I personally haven't had any experience with a project like that in California.
Thank you.
Danielle?
Yeah. So on the state requirements for wildfires and flooding, is that enforcing like DRC 4290, 4291 within our general plan? Or is that have to deal with more like building codes? Can you give me any insight on what the county's or the state's new requirements are for wildfires and flooding?
Well, it's related to the safety element requirements, in terms of addressing evacuation, route planning, and issues related to wildfire and actually flooding and earthquake safety. I don't know which the PRC.
So Public Resource Code 4290 has to deal with, and we're dealing with it in the Planning Commission, but it's design elements for roads through timbered, forested landscapes, especially if you're going to put in developments with turnouts, widths, grades. You know, there's a lot of that. 4291. Deals with vegetation management within 150 feet of a house as far as what your fuels will look like. So wasn't sure if that's going to be incorporated in this plan or if that's just left to the state. Because, one of the things within our county is, we're low income. By and large, we're a low income county. One of the huge concerns besides, government overreach is the cost of our county and the citizens to comply with the general plan that we will be putting in place or potentially putting in place. And, to do the cleanup, fuels reduction could be depending on where the infrastructure is on these houses to meet 4291, could be thousands of dollars a tree for removal. And I don't see how that, is going to be able to be implemented. And then along with that fire piece, the greenhouse gas emissions, because over half of our county is timbered, 60-something percent is timbered ground, a lot of which has been burned and currently burning up. How do you guys model for all of the emissions that are still happening, not just currently, because, the reality is only half of the carbon is being released currently with the smoke, but the residual is still left standing dead, and it's still emitting, and it's not just releasing carbon, it's releasing methane and all kinds of other particulate matters and methane, etc. How do you guys look at that with the greenhouse gas emissions? Do you look at timberland? The reason I'm asking is I see a vehicle which, on the symbol, and I'm just looking at, to me, that says more residential community-based management of greenhouse gas, when in Siskiyou County, greenhouse gas is mitigated by the timberland.
Or, the focus of most of the greenhouse gas emission analysis is vehicle analysis.
But
Elaine, can you speak to this?
So it's only vehicles.
You're moving out of my technical.
Got it. Okay.
I'm Elaine. Okay. So the GHG emission analysis that we'll do in the EIR is going to be based on the build-out potential of the county. It's not going to look at the trees that are within the county right now. There's not really a way to model that.
Okay. That's one of my concerns, is that we're, you know, coming up with all of these great plans to manage greenhouse gas emissions, climate adaptation, wildfires, managing the people, but not really the elements that are affecting, which is our land management. You know, our land management policies are creating an AQI of almost 400. Our land management policies are dictating, you know, the amount of available water in the Shasta Valley because we have juniper intrusion. And we're managing the people without looking at how the land has changed over the last 80 to 100 years. And why did we have water back then and we don't have now? Like, why are our springs going dry? Why do we have additional wildfire? We've always had lightning strikes at 3,000, you know, strikes in a night. That is not a new phenomenon. What is new is the stand densities in the timber. And so that's my big concern with these type of plans, is that we're going to have benchmarks that we will never meet. Because right now, we will never meet clean air requirements when our forests are burning and there's, you know, 30 fires out in the wilderness, because you can make all of us ride bicycles and we cannot get rid of the smoke outside. So that's like, how do we mitigate that? Because Siskiyou County, we are rural. We live here because we like being rural. And how do we, I guess,
let me rephrase your question. You said you only look at vehicle currently. Are you saying you can't include that other information if the information is available?
That's what I'm trying to say. Is like, how do we incorporate that to have a realistic benchmark? Because, or a realistic plan to meet any goal. You know, because we want sound management to have healthy forests, to not have our forests locked down. And healthy air. And, you know, my big concern is that we're putting all these great overarching policy documents in without really tackling the problems. You know, it's just a bunch of smoke and mirrors. And I'm not one to just look at the easy targets, but really look at why is our environment behaving the way it is. So, I know it's a big problem, but I have a feeling if you're doing environmental stuff, I'll probably be knowing you on a first-name basis, because that's my area of work, and what I've dedicated my life to is healthy forests. And anyways, I don't know if you have any comments on that. But
yeah, it's just a little limited with the modeling that we can use. We use the California Emissions Estimator Model, CaliMod, and that has like certain inputs. It's based on land use, and it uses vehicles as one of the sources of GHG emissions.
Okay. Have you looked into like the Climate Action Registry or any of those other models that the state has developed for greenhouse gas emissions that deal with forests? And I just ask if that's relevant because we are such a heavily forested community.
We can look into that. Okay. We usually use CaliMod because it's recommended by the Air District.
Maybe we can look at that and get more of a you know, a forest-centric with the urban. I mean, obviously, vehicles are an issue. We have, you know, I-5, you know, up and down. Most of our traffic, I would argue anecdotally, is you know, cross-county traffic getting north and south in the state, or through the state, through us. You know. So, okay. I think I've made my comments.
So, Ms. Robert?
The bulk
play off of Commissioner Lindworm's comments and others, we are not a one-size-fits-all community, and this is a perfect example of that. This is an extreme problem here. Air quality is a huge issue here when it comes to forest fires. Not so much vehicular emissions. So that model will fit our needs much better than just vehicle emissions. So I beg you to use that model instead of just the other one, because it fits our needs much better. And I lost my other train of thought.
Thank you. Did my commissioner have any questions? If so, right, Mr. Chai.
I'm going to come back once more around.
You are?
I'm just going through the...
Sounds good. If you can do one more play, that's awesome.
After everybody gets another 5-minute break.
thank you for coming here today and taking all these questions and throwing stuff at you. I just want to let Mr. Gibbons know, I'd asked earlier, you know, if we had a general plan. Sometimes we ask a general open questions. You know, the county knows it. It just, some people think it's a new plan or something coming in. When we're actually updating something we already have existing. So I just want to let people know that we're doing that. So some different partners or stakeholders you may want to consider. Of course, for the cities and the service districts, for the ag areas, of course, Cattlemen or Farm Bureau. And then SCED, which is Siskiyou County Economic Development Corporation, I believe.
Council.
That's it, council. Would be one for the economic development aspect. They have a county perspective, but if we're looking at economic development, that would be a value partner to consider. On top of doing the countywide workshops and those sorts of things in CSDs and cities, for the safety element, I understand Mr. Shinone's be doing that, so I'm sure he'll be areas, I think of like COPCO, they don't have a CSD or a city, I'm sure he'd be working with the fire chief and the fire board there. And then kind of an economic, that last question, or number three, something we could try to capture for economic, you know, for the county opportunities. We have I-5 going through. Commissioner Lindner brought that up. That's a lot of traffic to capture for economic development. We also have Highway 97, the north-south route, Highway 39, which is the Tule Lake area, and then Highway 89, capturing some of that traffic going through there so that money is spent in that local area. Looking at Fowler, I'm sure Highway 3 should always be included as well. But
96,
yes. With some of this traffic traveling through that could be captured, you know, dollars spent in that local community, it's an economic thing that we haven't fully captured in all those outlying communities. Mr. Chair, I'm done. Thanks.
So, Ms. Copsa.
So, I'll just add that it would be a requirement from at least myself that the greenhouse gas emissions with the forest fire be part of the plan. It's not voluntary, it's not going to be subjective. It should be required element because that's what we're fighting. And if you're looking for the baseline and you're not incorporating that, you make the whole plan irrelevant. That's it.
I think the overriding thing when you see and you listen to all the comments, you know, it's a quality of life issue up here for Siskiyou County. You know, it's such a big, diverse thing. So, again, just want to reiterate, you need to reach out above and beyond to get people's input on this. I'll go back around one more time if we can make it quick. Otherwise, I'm going to take a 5-minute break for Wendy. Mr. Fowler. If you're going to be more than 5 minutes, I'm going to take a break now.
Go ahead and take your 5 minutes.
Let's take 5 minutes now because
you're starting to know me now.
Well, I just want to make sure everyone has an opportunity. I don't want to cut it short, but it's not fair to Wendy to go beyond an hour plus.
Okay.